From Jefferson Public Radio, I'm Eric Thiel. Welcome to another JPR Live Session. JPR Live Sessions are recorded with Audix microphones. Audix, when sound matters. My guests today, it feels that it's long overdue to have them in the studio. Not one, but two of the best blues prospects to come out of the Pacific Northwest. Curtis Salgado and Alan Hager are here. Hello, gentlemen. Welcome to JPR.
Thank you, Eric, for the compliment.
It's great to meet both of you and finally have you in the studio. Their newest project, the newest album out in duo form, is called Rough Cut. Information can be found at curtissalgado.com. Your collaboration, if I understand correctly, goes back quite a number of years, back to the early 2000s.
Yes, sir.
How did you first cross paths?
This is Curtis Salgado talking, and I was playing music with a guy named Terry Robb, who you've had here.
Yeah.
And Terry kept bragging about saying, man, he says, you know, you think I'm something, you should hear Alan Hager. I had seen Alan Hager and with Terry Robb, but Terry did all the lead work, and I never really got to hear Alan do his thing. Eventually, I went in to see a friend of mine named Lloyd Jones on an off night. There's a lot of cats, just guitar players that are playing in this genre, doing solo work. So I went in to see Lloyd do a solo at this pretty much Bucket of Blood on 82nd Division in Portland. And I went in there, and there was no Lloyd Jones. It was Alan Hager. So I thought, well, man, I get a chance to see him. So I sat in there, and there wasn't a lot of people. There was like a Tuesday night, and he came, sat down, picked up the guitar, laid it flat on his lap, and I was like, is he headed in the Charlie Patton direction? Because Charlie Patton played various styles, and it wasn't just to show off. I knew enough to know that Charlie did it, I'm sure, for musical reasons, which maybe Alan will explain in a second. And then he proceeded to do a Charlie Patton song. Mm. And I'm going to just say it once. Nobody does Charlie Patton songs very often. And if they're, you know, maybe a few cats that are into it, at least in my knowledge. Mm. And he was knocking it out of the park. And he was playing it like he had done his homework. It freaked me out. And then he played another song. It was some rare song from the 19 pre-war blues. So we made friends, and I said, hey, you know, man, wow, Terry was, you know. And so would you play a gig with me? I said, you know, if I set something up, would you? So we set up a gig in Vancouver, Washington, really easy to drive from Portland,
sure.
Right? And we got every Thursday night there, and we were there from 2003 to, like, 2007.
Wow.
Playing. But then we just, no rehearsal, we just sat down, and just played the blues. And you know this song? Yeah, do you know this? And eventually we came up with, I mean, we know a bazillion tunes. If not, I can just call them up. Will you learn this song? Sure, I'll go over it. I haven't done it, and da-da-da. And I learn the words, and we just play it.
Yeah. Now, this duo and the band situation is a wonderful thing. And Curtis has been incredibly gracious towards me, with me, in both the duo format and then in the band. It's a good time, and you can tell. There's something, some good chemistry between the two of us, and it's really easy. He grew up in Eugene, I grew up in Portland. We were listening to the exact same music, so our understanding, knowledge, appreciation, whatever you want of that, is pretty much the same.
Alan, I'm glad you mentioned that, because just a minute ago, Curtis mentioned knowing a ton of tunes. Mm-hmm. In your background, you've got jazz studies. Mm-hmm. Study for a while with Pat Metheny.
Yep.
You've got classical guitar studies at conservatory.
Yep.
So your catalog is immense.
Yes.
Do you still play, practice those other styles?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm a definite musical mutt. Yeah. No, really. I mean, and all of those styles influence everything I do. Mm-hmm. They really do. Mm-hmm. And
you know, the band is not a blues band, you know, if I may say, and that's why I hired. I'm playing rhythm and blues, funk, soul, rock and roll, gospel. Everything that's under the R&B or Americana thing. So, man, I mean, I like Rage Against the Machine, and I like Roy Orbison. I like Sam Cooke, and I like George Clinton.
You're wearing a Parliament shirt now,
sir. I like it all. You know, to me, if it hits it, you know, there's two kinds of music, good and bad, and that depends on the individual.
Yeah. Well, let's hear a tune, and then I want to question a little bit more along the lines of the kind of music that you make and kind of where the boundaries may or may not be. Curtis Salgado, Alan Hager are live in the studio today. Their latest release together is called Rough Cut. What do you guys want to do first today?
Let's do I'm Too Young to Die, an old Sonny Boy Williamson tune. He was a great songwriter. Yeah, great, very prolific character. Who was from the 1930s and lived up to about 1964, 65. Mm-hmm. You know, played with the Yardbirds and Eric Clapton when he went over to England. And when he got home back to Helena, Arkansas, nobody cared. You know, they didn't even know where it was. And yet this guy did this, you know, he influenced a lot of people.
Cool.
A lot of people.
This is Curtis Salgado and Alan Hager playing live here at JPR.
I'm scared of that child. I'm too young to die. She's such a cute little girl. She's got such a wonderful mug. When she starts talking, voice bust a stone jug. I'm scared of that child. I'm scared of that child. I'm scared of that child. I'm too young to die. Yes, I am. I'm young to die, too young to die. I'm scared of that child. I'm too young to die.
That is called I'm Too Young to Die from the record Rough Cut. Curtis Salgado, Alan Hager are live in the studio today. Curtis Salgado singing, playing harmonica, Alan Hager on electric guitar. I want to get back to this idea of the kind of music you play. And I mean, you are known as a soul guy, a blues guy, an R&B guy. Is there a boundary that can be defined for what is or is not the blues, especially nowadays?
Nah, you know what? You know who Otis Spann is? He's one of my heroes. Now, that was a piano player with Muddy Waters. And, you know, so Muddy had in his band a superstar band, and they all went off on their own. So we're talking 1948 through 1950s into 60s. Some of the greatest Chicago blues, the great, ever recorded. Very influential. I remember one thing. And what led me into this direction for me was Otis Spann said, man, the blues is a feeling. Mm. And, you know, with study behind that, I just started, you know, as years went by, it's like the blues, the word, the blues comes from 1700 Victorian age. And it meant like melancholy. Mm-hmm. And then it turned into the blue devils. Oh, you know, you could see some woman fan. I've got the blue devils. And somehow that word morphed into, as W.C. Handy said, I was in some small town down south, and this guy was pushing broom and whistling, and it was such an interesting form to him. He wasn't playing. He was like whistling or something. He goes, what's that? He goes, oh, man, that's the blues. I got the blues. Yeah. You know, he's like, so what's that? So he further investigates. It's been around since the late 1800s. And Jelly Roll Morton would say, man, we were playing that stuff long before W.C. Handy came along. He was the first one to take it and put it into a form and put it into a format and a form and write it out and then publish it and take whatever. So he is kind of the father of the, but blues has been playing a long time.
Yeah.
Would you agree what he is?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And it's funny, too, I was going to mention, there's actually, and I think it was 1867, it was right after the end of the Civil War. There's an article, might have been in a Memphis newspaper, I can't remember, but one of the guys is describing a street musician who, some guy was playing the guitar, and his comment was, he was playing the oddest music, but it was full of the blues, as in how you were talking about it. He wasn't talking about the blues form. So that goes back, obviously, before the turn of the 20th century, which is pretty cool.
The term the blues, to me, in this day and age, is a kiss of death, even though it's still around and whatever.
Yeah, it's always interesting to see where artists get categorized when the Grammy nominations come out.
You know what I am? And I'm proud of this because I didn't, you know, I'm in the blues soul category.
Okay.
Which is Bobby Bland, Johnny Taylor, Little Johnny, you know, something with a, you know, with a gospel influence.
I'd love to hear another tune. Before we get to that, one of the things that I have observed about the two of you before we went on the air and during the session is that in addition to being great performers and knowing tons of songs, you also know and care about the backstories behind the songs and the people who created them, going all the way back throughout history. Where did that discovery bug come from?
You know, for me, it was really simple. I had been interested in pop music, and then actually it was through Cream's Disraeli Gears that I saw the name Blind Joe Reynolds as the writer, the composer of Outside Woman Blues. I thought it was a joke. I mean, literally, I thought this was a joke. And very shortly after that, I was in Music Millennium in Portland. It was a very cool record store, still there. Anyway, and I was going through the Origin of Jazz Library Records, the LPs, and I flipped one over, and then it said Blind Joe Reynolds, Outside Woman Blues. And I'm like, wow. And actually, Terry was with me. And I called Terry over, and I go, look at this. I said, I'm going to buy this. So I bought it. I brought it home. I dropped a needle on that tune, and it freaked me out. It was so incredible. And, of course, that's exactly where Eric Clapton had gotten the idea, and their version was different. But it was still the essence of that tune. And then from there, it was the liner notes. Mm. I read every liner note, and I would go, oh, this guy was influenced. And so that thing of history just hit me, and I went, oh, man, I got to know everything about these guys. And I basically became obsessed with knowing not just their music. And I'm talking about learning. I spent hours transcribing these things. But who were these guys? Yeah. Who did they know? What did they do? Because that's part of their music. It's inseparable, that. So that was me.
And that's before he earned his master's degree. So it wasn't like he went there first and then. This is like as a kid.
Yeah, I was a kid.
And I have the same story.
Yeah. Alan, you said you were going to take the lead on this next tune.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
It's a great old tune called Long Train Blues.
Do I talk too much?
No, you talk very well. Thank you. This is by Robert Wilkins, who was one of the blues guys who had an early career, and this song comes from 1928. Mm. He then went into complete obscurity and quit playing blues, became a reverend, and he was rediscovered in the 1960s like many guys were, and he was then Reverend Wilkins, and he had changed all of his blues songs into songs praising God. Mm. But basically, they were the same. But this one,
Is this the original?
This is a very naughty tune called Long Train Blues from 1928. The cleanest description is it's about one woman enjoying two men. Uh-huh. That's what it's about.
Well put.
This is Curtis Salgado and Alan Hager playing Long Train Blues here at JPR.
She says she gonna ride till the blues got off to leave. You know the pool pulling three trains running side by side. You know the two pulling three trains running side by side. And they got my woman on board, and I hope they satisfied. I'm glad she don't rain, she did telephone. I'm glad she don't write, and she wouldn't telephone. She gonna stay gone very long. Thank you. sweet scene. You know my baby went away, got the longest train she'd seen. She says she gonna ride till the blues got off the lane. You know the two pulling freight trains running side by side. You know the two pulling freight trains running side by side. They got my woman on board and I hope they satisfied.
Long Train Blues is the name of that one. Curtis Salgado, Alan Hager are live in the studio today. Their latest duo album is called Rough Cut. You can find information at curtissalgado.com. That one out on Alligator Records, if memory serves. Curtis, tell me about the importance to you, to the world of music, of Hate to See You Go by Little Walter.
Oh,
can
oh,
you sum
man.
That up in
How
a minute
many hours
or two?
That's,
do you
that's got? The top five blues record of all time.
Why?
Because for many reasons. Here's one. It's Little Walter, who was, well, I think he ran away at the age of 12 or 8 or something from Louisiana. He just had the X factor. And he took up the harmonica, and he could hear his heroes of the time, which are saxophone, like Coleman Hawkins or, of course, Louis Jordan, who were popular at the time. But his tone, his approach, how he makes a solo, and how deep that record is, the song Hate to See You Go. It's all the elements, all the little cells and molecular structure that gets together, all the magic that puts together and goes into the recordings. That's what, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's this exchange of energy that's being recorded. And that record is like, oh my, it's just the deepest thing. And there's other deep stuff. But that record to me is the one that all I need is that on the island
I'm
all
imagining,
by myself.
I'm imagining there's a young kid out there somewhere in a musical home surrounded by his Spotify and Pandora that might now have everything you've put out.
Oh, that would be, it wouldn't be good as Little Walter's.
I find it so interesting that you once actually mentioned that you think harmonica is an annoying instrument.
Yes. God, who are you?
Unless it's Little Walter.
Yeah. No, I mean, Little Walter, there's a lot of contemporary guys that I think are great and stuff, but it can be an annoying instrument. I don't want to hear... you know, that stuff. I can't stand that. And it's on a lot of records. It's like... Some musician may play harmonica, but he really hasn't worked at it. And so I have records that are totally ruined. That doesn't, you know, you got to have, you got, it's a piano. You got to play it with loud, soft, this and that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's a beautiful instrument. It's almost like a violin.
So, okay, is it overstating it to say that at this point in your musical careers that you guys are icons of the Pacific Northwest blues and soul scene?
You could certainly say that about careers.
Certainly,
what?
Well-educated elder statesmen of the Northwest blues scene. My question to you both, and either of you can take this one, is I know that there is a Northwest blues scene, pretty good one. Is there a Northwest blues sound?
That's been said to me a bunch of times, and I kind of think so. Basically, where you said, certainly Paul DeLay, and who had a son, or me, or Robert Cray, we don't sound like Chicago people, you know, so you can say that. Here, it's a little more open-minded.
Alan, you're going to chime in?
Yeah, briefly. My answer would be no. I don't think there is. But I would say this, though. Two things, briefly. One is there's unique humans that had their own style that if you want to say that's a Northwest sound, I would go for that. But something that I think that occurred, you know, with radio changed the way that the blues grew up. There was very regionalized blues in Mississippi by all the early guys. If you were a Jackson blues musician, you sounded one way. If you were from the Delta, you sounded a couple different ways. Yeah. If you were from Memphis, you sounded different from them. And they were distinct, of course, related styles, but distinct. And as soon as radio came in and everybody could hear everybody else, that sort of regionality started to vanish. And now, to me, I mean, we go out all over the place at festivals and we hear people from, you know, Louisiana who sound like they're from Seattle, who sound like they're from Oslo, who sound like they're, yeah. To me, that's what I
think. He should have answered that question in the first place. That's far more intelligent than where I went. So,
will you play us one more tune?
Of course.
Yeah.
What's it going to be?
I want my dog to live longer.
Yeah, we love this one. This is Curtis Salgado and Alan Hager playing live here in the JPR studios.
Wish I could read the minds of women. Wish I had gills for swimming, and I wish I had movie star looks. I wish I knew every trick in the book, and I'd like to feel first love again, be 20 years younger. But the greatest wish I wanna come true, I want my dog to live longer. I wish I was the king of rock and roll. Wish I was cool and in the know. And I wish I'd wrote Blowing in the Wind. I'd like to see my late mother again. And I'd like to stop poverty. Yeah. Save this world from hunger. But the greatest wish I wanna come true. I want my dog to live longer. Yes, I want my dog to live longer. So when it goes, I'll be blue. And if I had the power, oh, I'd have him live as long as me and you. 'Cause God's got a reason for everything. In the Lord I trust, but this ain't right. God needs to see the light, 'cause dogs don't live long enough. He cheers me up when I'm sad. He's the best friend I've ever had. And I don't care where his nose has been, I'll let him lick my face again and again. His love is unconditional, and that just makes me stronger. So the greatest wish I want to come true, I want my dog to live longer. Oh, the greatest wish I want to come true, I want my dog to live longer.
I want my dog to live longer. I know that there is a substantive story behind that one. Curtis Salgado, Alan Hager are playing live in the studio today. It's a tune from the record called Rough Cut. Information is at curtissalgado.com. Mm. This story goes all the way back to childhood for you, yeah?
Yeah, it does. I always said to myself, I want my dog to live longer. I said that when I was 14 and I discovered it. Had a dog named Chester, and when he was a puppy, I was a newborn. When I was 14, he was 14. One day I'm sitting down and he had convulsions, started foaming at the mouth. He's having a heart attack. That's when I found out that your dog only lives to be so long. Chester lived to be 14. So I always had that with me. And whenever I had a conversation with a group of people when he got around to pets or dog. I had a, but dogs, man, they don't live long enough.
Yeah. I'm glad you played it for us. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having us.
And I'm so glad that you had time to stop by. It's been an absolute pleasure to chat with you and to learn about your backgrounds and all of the knowledge that you've got about the music. Curtis Salgado, Alan Hager are here in the studio. Their latest duo record is called Rough Cut. You can find information at Curtis's website, curtissalgado.com. Guys, thanks again for coming by.
Eric, you're a class act, man. Those
you are
good
indeed.
Questions.
Thank you
very much.
This was a very good time. Thank you.
JPR Live Sessions are supported by and recorded with Audix Microphones. Located in Wilsonville, Oregon, Audix designs, engineers, and manufactures high-performing innovative products that contribute to the advancement of the professional audio industry.